This is TENT Sports Podcast. QT Ski, LK. Let's go.
TNT, we back. Yeah. Logging in and see that. Okay. Wins and losses, crazy crosses, holding one. Talking golf and rolling one. Got me coughing every weekend, so it's often. And I'm dropping every week. Name the topic, we can speak. From the Rockets to the Heat. Well, the Rockets to the net. Slick weird, big beard. On my James Harden flex. No one came as hard as this. Watch me Shannon sharpen it. I depart like marking it. TNT, that's a T with a hyphen. ENT, if you're typing, seeing me, that's a like.
Next to the max is like I'm Stephen A. Tag me in your subject. TikTok, Facebook, Grammar, Twitter page. Tell me who you loving. Big discussions for you, sport or holics. Jackie Moon, Tropics. Waddell in Oakland, straight 30 bopping. Tommy Brady pockets. Who had drunk up in the party? Toss Lombardi, get it started. Mardi Gras Mike, can't be guarded. My new spicy like New Orleans. Whether local, national, foreign, we get it. Working overtime, cafe do mine with the coverage. I'm on you at
no
the line.
No one came as hard as this. Watch me Shannon sharpen it. Okay. I depart like marking this. TNT, we back. Logging in and see that. Wins and losses, crazy crosses, holding one. Talking golf and rolling one. Got me coughing every weekend, so it's often. And I'm dropping every week. Lame the topic, we can speak.
Now tune into TENT Sports Podcast with Terrence Bennett.
Get the latest
sports all day, every day.
Bring it in now.
Let's get it.
Get it. Good morning. This is TNT Sports Podcast, episode number 137. And this morning I got David Grubb with me this morning. David, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Glad to be with you.
Great, great, great. Now, David, can you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I guess the really short version is currently on the CEO, owner, and operator of Hard to Paint Sports. Okay. We manage the Bird Rights website, which covers the New Orleans Pelicans, as well as the Bird Calls podcast. And then we also produce my podcast, Hard to Paint, with David Grubb, and Before the Whistle with Matty Hudak. And so we try to do a little bit of everything. I also do color commentary for Tulane men's basketball, and I write for MLBBro.com, which covers black and brown baseball players in the major leagues. So I do a little bit of everything, and I've been in sports and public relations now for almost 30 years.
Man, that's a long time in the field, man. So you definitely got to enjoy it, for sure. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a little bit about David, and then we're going to jump right into the podcast. So David was born in Detroit, raised in New Orleans. David grew up, has nearly 30 years experience in journalism, broadcasting, and communication, and alumni of Edna Carr High School and Wake Forest University. David began his career in front of a camera at KLAX-TV in Alexandria, Louisiana, and WGG-BTV in Springfield, Massachusetts. After a diversion into public relations and marketing, he rejoined the sports world in 2013 as a sports information director for Southern University at New Orleans and the Gulf Coast Athletic Conference, as well as being a regular contributor to SportsNola.com. Since that time, he's grown into a multimedia presence covering LSU, high school football, and primarily the New Orleans Pelicans, the Bird Rights, and Crescent City Sports. In August 2019, David became the first African-American to host a daily sports show on a major affiliate in the city of New Orleans. When his show, Hard in the Paint with David Grubb, debuted on WODT in July, HITP moved to a daily podcast. David's work has been featured on NBA.com, Fox Sports Radio, CBS Sports, and has been recognized multiple times for his coverage of the Pelicans. So, how you get into sports, man? How did you get into that field? Like, what was the startup?
I think, you go back to college, and I was at Wake Forest, and I started kind of trying to figure, you know, you're, as everybody is in college, trying to figure out what you want to do. I thought I was going to be a business major.
Yeah.
And realized that that was not my calling. I like to run my mouth and I love sports.
Right.
I was always involved in sports, you know, my whole life. I played high school basketball at Edna Carr. And then in college, I worked with the women's basketball team as a practice player. We had a group of guys that practiced against the women's team every day. Also, you know, was an intramural ref and all these things. So sports was always a big part of my life. And I thought, well, journalism and sports broadcasting seems to be a natural fit. So I started in television. And the thing I found out about television that just didn't fit with me was I had opinions. And in TV, you really don't, you know, on a local news broadcast, you get three and a half, maybe 4 minutes to do the sports. And it's mostly just, you know, you get one story and a bunch of recaps.
Yeah.
And you're in and you're out. So it just was a situation that didn't fit my personality and my skill set. So I took some years off. I did PR and, you know, was still lending my voice basically to other people, whether it was in politics or education or whatever I was working on, advertising. You know, I was giving my voice to other people and right. helping them find theirs, but I still wanted to do my thing. And, you know, really it was at Suno doing the work of a sports information director that I fell in love with writing again and talking about athletes and talking to athletes. So that kind of just pushed me back into the business, you know, a little bit. And then a few years later, I decided, you know, I'd had enough of time where, you know, I was putting more energy into my sports work than I was my regular 9-to-5. So I was just like, let me see if I can do this on my own. And
yeah.
That's what the journey's been since.
Okay. So when David was a child, What did David want to do to grow when he grew up? What was the goal then at a young age?
You know, like most kids, I probably, you know, I wanted to be like my dad. My dad was just, he works in insurance, but at the time, you know, you just think about he's a businessman. So I wanted to be like him.
Yeah.
And the other thing I always wanted to be, you know, the kid part of me, I wanted to either play starting center for the New York Knicks or, you know, I wanted to be a right fielder for the New York Yankees. Those were the teams that I grew up loving. And so, you know, I thought, hey, if I can be 7 feet tall, I can, you know, I can be the next Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
It just wasn't in the cards for me.
Gotcha. And I see you covered Tulane. You know, they had a coaching switch, basically. Willie Fritz went to Houston, and now they got John Summerall from Troy, my hometown. What's your thoughts on that? How you feel about John Summerall coming back? Because he was here once before. What do you think he go bring to Tulane?
Well, I think the first thing he brings is a lot of energy. You see that he's a guy who's built programs. Troy has had success before he got there, but he added something different. He made Troy a very physical program.
Yeah.
Dominant defensively. And a team that people didn't like to play. And I think with Tulane, that's what they needed to get back to. You know, there was some of that edge. I think that was missing this past season after that Cotton Bowl success. You know, they lost a couple games that they probably shouldn't have lost or wouldn't have lost the year before. They were just missing something. I think part of it is when you have the specter of your coach and every week you know somebody wants your coach.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's hard for a team to deal with. And it got to the point where, you know, you find out that your coach is leaving the day of the conference championship during the game, essentially.
That's crazy.
So I think that kind of sidetracked Tulane as well. So I think John Summerall brings in somebody that the whole community could coalesce behind, a young coach, you know, that – and I think when you're a school like Tulane, you know, if you have a successful coach, they're not going to be there forever. You're always going to be the kind of program that people are looking to get to the next level.
Right.
But you've got to have the right people when you hire that coach. And I think that John Summerall, whether he's here for 5 years – or for 10 years, I think has all the things in place to be successful in building what Willie Fritz started.
Yeah, I said John Summerall, he did a great job in Troy. He brought that, he brought the fans out. You know, like I said, I'm from Troy. Just to see what he did with Troy, man, is outstanding. So, yeah, like I said, he coached at Tulane before. I forgot what he did. I think he was a graduate assistant, I believe, but he's coming back. So, definitely, I think he's going to bring that fire back to Tulane. So, that'll be exciting to see for sure. And Willie Fritz, I mean, he did good though. So shout out to Willie Fritz as
Absolutely.
Well. Yeah, he did a great job. Shout out to my good friend Zacchaeus. He, that's his father-in-law. He finna marry his daughter. So shout out to my guy Zacchaeus. But yeah, man. So Tulane, what if you had to guess, what would you think a record would be? A possible record would be this year, just starting up.
I mean, it's hard to put a number on it right now, but I would say this about Tulane right now, knowing about what they brought in, you know, at the transfer portal and who they've recruited there and what they do have coming back. You know, most of that defense is intact. And that was a very good defense last year.
Yeah.
You know, there were just times where offensively, Michael Pratt physically wasn't able to get things done that he would have liked to. You know, I think he was real beat up. And the wide receiving core wasn't as deep as maybe as they thought it was going into the season. So it was hard for them to make some big plays. I think that big play potential is going to be back this year with Ty Thompson as coming in from Oregon to play quarterback, and certainly you have some transfers at wide receiver that look really exciting. So I think this is a team that absolutely is a contender as far as you look at the group of five schools to make the playoff. I would say that Tulane, legitimately, if they play up to their ability, they have a real chance to be in that 12-team playoff.
Okay, for sure. And speaking to Michael Pratt, man, he did a great job, man, all his years at Tulane, and he's definitely in the NFL draft for sure. What team do you think possibly would need him he could contribute to? Just, I mean, we ain't gonna have it right now, so anyway, but if you had to guess, what team you think would try to get him?
It seems like, you know, the Broncos have a lot of liking of him. They've interviewed him twice. You know, he's the only player right now that the Broncos have already met with twice.
Man.
And I think, you know, we know that's a team that's looking for a quarterback and also needs a cheap quarterback because they're taking a huge financial hit on the release of Russell Wilson.
For sure.
So I think you can get a Michael Pratt in the third round, quite probably, is that where he would go, because, you know, you have a guy like a Michael Penix who's going to go in the second round.
Yeah.
And I think you'd say that Pratt is maybe a cut below that by NFL scouts. So I think late second, third round is a good place for him to go, to a place like Denver, still not have a whole a ton of pressure on him to start immediately and get the chance to learn and get himself physically right. You know, I just think this offseason is so important for him to get his body together because he was worn down at the end of last season for Tulane, and you saw it.
Yeah.
His knee just wasn't right. You know, he didn't have the kind of – he's not a burner, but he's a guy who's always been elusive and able to extend plays, and he wasn't really able to do that at the end of the season. So I think Michael is probably going to go, you know, in the third, maybe the fourth round, depending on how the draft falls. But I think wherever he goes, you know, he's one of those guys. Look, most first-round quarterbacks fail. Where you usually find your value in quarterback is that day two or day three guy who figures the game out. So we'll see if Michael Pratt can become one of those guys.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like I said, he did – he played a great 4 years of football, man. I think if he do go to Denver, like you say, he got interviewed twice, the only player to get interviewed twice. And I think Sean Payton can do something with him, man, and get him up to par, man, and on that level. So I think he'll make a lot of noise in the NFL, man. I don't think he'll make it right starting off, but I think he'll work his way into it for sure.
And he's smart. He's got the arm talent. He's got, like I said, the ability to extend plays. You have to you look at the thing. There's two things that you really look for out of college quarterbacks: accuracy, and he throws a good but accurate ball.
Yeah.
And did he get a lot of snaps in college? And there's one thing Michael Pratt did. He got a lot of snaps.
Yeah.
So
sure.
He's seen things. So you know, you usually find the quarterbacks who have multiple years of starting typically do better than guys who are one hit wonders in college. So Pratt has had to learn, you know, a lot of different things. Had different offensive coordinators. So yeah, I think that gives him an advantage too.
Yeah, like I said, I wouldn't be shocked he'd be a star. Yeah, I think he'll be a star for sure. So also, man, you cover the Pelicans as well. Now I want to definitely get into that with the whole Zion situation. Like I said, just being here, I hear so much negative talk about Zion, you know, and I think that you can't really control yourself getting hurt and stuff like that. What's your thoughts on Zion? Because there's a lot of negative things going on with Zion. The people talk about Zion. But I always say you got to be in those shoes to understand, you know. So what's your thoughts on Zion?
I think Zion Williamson is, you know, when you look at the pantheon of Pelicans players, just if you're talking talent, he's the most naturally gifted player the Pelicans have ever had. You know, Anthony Davis certainly is right there. Yeah. But I think Zion, you know, you look at the combination of speed and power and touch and all those things. It's just some things that you just can't create right. in a lab if you wanted to. And, you know, like you said, injuries have been the biggest part of his career, but you look at he's still 23 years old.
Right.
And you have a lot of time for him to develop. Maybe not a lot of basketball years. I never figured he's going to be one of those players who plays for 15 years. His body is just not conducive to that type of longevity in the NBA. But I think he's special. And in the NBA, you need a special player to win a championship. There's not a single team that has won one that you go back to unless you're talking about, you know, maybe if you want to say that the Detroit Pistons, when they beat the Lakers, didn't have a special offensive player. But you've got a Hall of Fame defender in Ben Wallace. You've got a Hall of Fame point guard in Chauncey Billups. You've got all-stars, you know, at other positions. So, and all defensive players. I think Zion Williamson has the ability to be a top 15 NBA player if everything comes together for him. And if the Pelicans make some moves to kind of build his roster a little bit more towards his skill set.
Right.
But I think people have been a little too hard on a young man who, imagine who you were. Right. At age 20, 21, 22, exactly. Where they're all not Kobe Bryant. They're all not LeBron James with that single-mindedness. It takes some time for young men to mature. And I think Zion is finally growing into that.
Yeah, like to your point, like you said, imagine yourself when you was 23. I think you're doing a great job, man, just to carry yourself at that age. You don't hear about him being in trouble and stuff like that. His focus is ball, so. I mean, I look at it like the injuries is something that you can't control, man. If you play sports, I think you understand that more, that you can't control it. Any accident that can happen. But now also another thing is just about how you take care of your body as well. So I think being on that level, that professional level, you know, you got to put that extra work in to take care of your body, at least try to win it with you. But at the end of the day, you can't control what happened to a certain extent, I'll say. But, you know, Willie Green doing a great job with that organization. I think he definitely one of the top tier coaches that came to coach the Pelicans, which he did play for, the Hornets at that time as well. So, what's your thought on Willie Green and his job? What he doing with the Pelicans?
You know, I think you absolutely see the potential for Willie and what his ceiling could be, and you also understand that he's a coach in his third year who was given, quite frankly, a situation that I wouldn't have wanted as a rookie coach.
Right.
You know, his first year, I think Willie would have been hired the same year that they drafted Zion and everything, that you let him go with his struggles when the stakes are at their lowest. And now, though, you've got Willie in year three, and the stakes are very high for this franchise. Something good has to happen, right. You know, this year. For them, they can't just end up in the play-in again. If something goes bad in these last 20 games and they end up in the play-in and don't make the playoffs, then we're talking about something very different with the future of this franchise. The pressure is so much different here in year three. But overall, I think Willie has made, you know, the two biggest things you need to as a coach. He understands his team first and foremost. He knows who his guys are by and large. He understands who they are emotionally, what they need. He seems to have the pulse of the team. And the second part is he has an idea of what he wants as the identity of the franchise.
Right.
He wants them to be a defensive first team that plays with tempo on offense. He knows what he expects them to do. Now, getting them to do that has been the harder part. And that's going to be hard for any first-year coach because you're trying to figure out how to be a teacher and an administrator at the same time. You know, before when you're an assistant, you have a very specific task. But when you're the head coach, you're looking into everything. So I think that there's that learning curve comes. But having James Borrego now certainly has helped the offense. And I think he has more people around him now in the organization that he trusts.
Right.
Before he walked into the situation as it was laid out for him, he's had some time now to kind of shape it in his own image. And we've seen that in each year that the Pelicans, their record has improved. So I think Willie's on the right track. It's just, can the organization continue to give him what he needs in order to flourish?
Right. Yeah, he had the respect of the teams, though. Yeah, like you said, he got the people around him he trusts now. And like you said, the organization got to give him what he needs to be successful. So, yeah, for sure. So, shout out to Willie Green as well. Now, you made history. Now, you became the first African-American to host a daily sports show on a major affiliate in the city of New Orleans, on which you show Hard in the Paint with David Grubb. And it debuted on WODT. What was their experience? Like, how does it feel to create history, like make history?
You know, honestly, it was very you know, I didn't know it at the time, but then when I had the conversation with some people who had been in the industry a little bit longer, it kind of put things in perspective, because I have heroes in the industry who I felt like, you know, people like Roe Brown, who was the first African-American sports journalist on television in New Orleans. You know, there are a lot of people who came before me who I felt like it definitely, you know, should have gotten a shot. But when you do get it, it's your responsibility. You know, you live up to what they, the example that they set. And at the same time, I wanted to do something that was uniquely mine. And so, you know, my goal from the beginning was to make a sports show that wasn't like everybody else's. I didn't want to be a talking head doing hot takes every day. I wanted to have people be entertained, but also to learn stuff and to have discussions about the deeper issues in sports and how they impact our lives, you know, that stadium finance or sports law or NIL and how these things impact, you know, the bigger scope of the world rather than just something you see in a newspaper or in a conversation on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
So, you know, that part to me was extremely important, and to get guests that other people weren't bringing on, to bring on more black people who were in the sports industry, more women who were in the sports industry,
right,
to try to give people an opportunity that weren't getting those opportunities from mainstream sports media.
Yeah. Dope, man. Like I said, it's an honor to have you on here, just making that type of noise, man. Me being a podcaster and seeing somebody do the same, somebody like me do that. So that's crazy, man. So I appreciate you, and I respect what you're doing. So what's next for you? What's next for David Grubb?
Well, right now we're working on trying to expand the Harden to Paint Network on YouTube. That's where all our podcasts are right now. And we're just trying to, we've done really well in the first year since we started. We've already, you know, exceeded 2,300 subscribers.
Yeah.
So, you know, in YouTube speak, getting to that 2,000 mark is kind of hard.
Right.
And we were able to do that really in about a 4 or 5 month span once we really kicked it up. And so we're going to continue to try to work with people and expand what we offer and make this into something that is a real partnership with content creators. There's so many of us out here who are doing the independent thing. And I think ultimately there's some strength in numbers that we can get to, whether it's been in working together on guests, is whether it's on, you know, creating our bigger audience together, going up against these much bigger and more well-funded organizations as we try to create our space out here.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to be a real force in creating the next generation of journalists. I think there's a lot of people out there who want to talk about sports, and that's great. But my niche is about, you know, getting into something a little bit deeper. So I want to help cultivate those people, those voices who want to ask deeper questions, harder questions, and conduct great interviews. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing. And hopefully there'll be more opportunities to do that in different venues and more people to work with.
Yeah, that's dope, man. And with the podcasting, man, it's definitely a creative process. So, like, you know, with the name of the show, logos, and all that creative stuff like that. So the name of your show is Harden to Paint with David Grubb. How did that come about? How did that name come about?
You know, basketball has always been my first love, and I wanted something that kind of resonated with both the game and how I approach what I do. And I just feel like that's the way I go. I was a post player when I played. You know, I'm tenacious. I like to, you know, once I see something, I go for it. And so I think that's just, you know, the style that I brought to the show is just, we're gonna have fun, and it's gonna go hard. We're gonna have conversation, and they're gonna go hard. And I just wanted people to kind of have that vibe and understand where I was coming from as soon as they saw the show's title.
Gotcha. And what would you want to tell any other podcasters? What advice would you give them?
The first thing I'll tell anybody is just be yourself. For better or for worse, be yourself. Because the only thing that we're really selling in this industry is authenticity.
Right.
And people can tell if you're yourself or you're not, if you're trying to be something or that you aren't. And that doesn't, you know, real recognizes real. And when you are not that, when you are fake to people, they turn away from that. So I would just say, even while you're making your mistakes, even while you're trying to figure out where exactly your voice is, be yourself and be consistent. You know, like if you're going to do it once a week, do it once a week. If you're going to do it once a month, do it once a month. But be consistent and be yourself.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's great advice. And my last question, David, man, what legacy do you want to leave?
I want to be somebody that told the truth to power. You know, that helped people who, you know, who didn't have information get it. And I made them stronger. And like, I don't view myself as somebody who stands on the side of the status quo. I'm a change agent. I've always viewed myself that way. Somebody wants to look behind the curtain and make sure everything's cool. And if it's not, I'm going to tell other people. So, you know, I want that to be my legacy, that David Grubb told the truth. And he spoke his mind, whether the consequences for him were good or bad. He was telling the truth. And I stand on that. I'm willing to take that sacrifice. I may not ever get the financial rewards because of that. And I know that it's cost me in some ways over the course of my career, but I feel good about the way I've handled myself because of that.
Right. All right, man. That was dope, man. David, thank you, man, for taking time to be on the show, man. I appreciate you, man. And like I said, everybody go subscribe to Harden the Paint with David Grubb. Listen, go to YouTube, subscribe everywhere. Where can they find your podcast at, besides YouTube? Where else can they find it?
Everywhere you get them, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get your podcast, we're there.
Great. So, David, man, thank you for taking time to be on the show, man. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much for the invitation, man. Anytime you need.
Great. This TNT Sports Podcast, episode number 137. Good morning.